is the UR Business Network.
And welcome to the Medical Travel Show, the program that covers the entire gamut of issues in international and domestic medical travel. Our guest today is Keith Pollard, the president of Intuition Communication, which publishes the IMTJ, a thought leader in international medical travel, as well as being a leading digital news aggregator in the medical tourism and international medical travel sector. Intuition also hosts a number of sector-leading web portals covering private healthcare in the UK and in Europe. And it's a pleasure to have you on the Medical Travel Show, Keith.
Good afternoon, Irvin, or is it morning your time?
It is indeed morning, but in this global economy, it almost doesn't matter anymore, does it?
It doesn't.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I thought our audience would benefit from hearing from you about how you found your way into the career you're in now with medical travel.
Okay. I suppose my first encounter with medical travel, or what is kind of better known in Europe as the kind of international patient business, was really when I was my career started in the kind of private hospital industry in the UK. So I was involved in marketing and operations in the London private hospital sector, and a very, very big proportion of our business was the international business, and still is for many of the clients that we have within London and in the UK generally. So, you know, my role there was kind of marketing and delivering services to international patients, and this goes back probably 20 years ago, which was certainly the boom time for London in the medical travel market. It's still a very important destination, but there's seen a lot of competition in recent years.
And in that experience that you had with the private healthcare sector in the UK, you were you focused primarily on attracting international residents to London to receive medical services there?
Yeah, it was a kind of mixed economy or a mixed patient base. So, you know, for the big private hospitals in London, their primary market is obviously kind of UK insured and UK self-pay patients. But, you know, for some hospitals, and I think around the world of medical travel, people don't appreciate the kind of numbers that do visit major centres in the UK, that, you know, we would expect 20-25% of the patients of the, you know, the bed days in the hospitals to be occupied by true medical travellers, i.e. they had jumped on planes from countries abroad, the Middle East, Turkey, Greece, other parts of Europe, Africa, to London to access the kind of level of expertise and services that are available there. So you do get, I mean, in London you get, I mean, certainly one of our clients currently, one of the biggest private hospitals in London, if you walked into their main reception today, you would see that it is clearly an international hospital, where 50% of the patients in that hospital will have come there from another country. And there's quite a few hospitals in London, both private hospitals and within the National Health Service. So in the National Health Service, big hospitals, specialist hospitals like Great Ormond Street Hospital, which is a kind of world-renowned children's hospital, it has a private patient unit which is solely for international patients, the Harris International Patient Centre. So all their private patient income comes from patients from another part of the world.
Well, certainly Great Ormond Street has a global brand. Is the proportion and experience that you had when working in the private healthcare sector, is that still the case today, where roughly a quarter of the occupied beds at any given day are of foreign consumers, and do you see that trending up or down, or has there been a change in the sources?
I think most people around the sector in the UK would say it's fairly flat. It is of those numbers. So if you take the biggest private hospital group, in fact, the US company, you know, the American company that owns seven of the biggest private hospitals in London, 25% of their patient throughput is international patients.
Impressive.
If you go to the Royal Marsden, which is a National Health Service hospital, cancer center within Europe, you would find that, you know, significant numbers of their patients are international. If you go to the Bupa Cromwell Hospital on Cromwell Road, you will find that nigh on 50% of their patients are international. So it's certainly not fallen away. The nature of it may have changed a little, but it's been very solid for many years. It is under threat.
Right. I do get the sense that this market, this phenomenon of foreign consumers coming to London to receive medical services, I do get the sense that this has been a long-standing practice in the London market.
Yeah, it's been there for a long, long time. The medical travel market is a very kind of complex market with lots of niches of treatment, you know, particular patients requiring certain treatments. You know, the reasons for traveling to another country there are a multitude of reasons. I think one of the issues around the market at the moment is everyone seems to be talking about people traveling because, you know, it's 30-40% of the cost of treatment in their own country, and that's where all the focus is. And that's where a lot of the hype is. If you look at the real kind of value and revenues that are generated in the medical travel market, they're not in that sector. They're in the kind of high value area where patients, either funding themselves or by their insurers or by their governments, are seeking treatment in other countries. And that's the kind of the core of the medical travel market, which has been there for many, many years.
So it's an interesting point you make that many destinations who want to attract international consumers hang their message or build their message around price. But you're saying that's really not why international medical travelers are motivated?
No, it's not. And I think it's one of the reasons why, you know, the market isn't where everyone wants it to be. The market, the medical tourism market has been heavily hyped. Lots of people have piled into the market with grand ambitions. And the reality of it is that patients, the kind of niche of the market, which is patients wanting treatment and wanting to go somewhere else because it's cheaper, because they can save, you know, large sums of money in theory, that hasn't really happened, because the price advantage, when you factor in other costs of medical travel, much of the price advantage is either exaggerated or just isn't as people might expect. And it's a big jump. You know, the problem, you know, the issue with healthcare is the last thing you want to do is to go to a foreign country with a foreign culture, with another language, to have a treatment. It's a kind of step. It's a decision of last resort. So it's a big decision to do that. And if it's a case of, okay, I don't need major surgery. I need surgery. Let's talk about the kind of elective surgery area. So I need surgery which is going to cost me a few thousand pounds or a few thousand dollars in my own country. When you look at the real cost comparisons and you factor in travel costs, accommodation costs, insurance, and so on, the price attractiveness is just not there. So it's not big enough. It's not savings of 50, 60, 70%.
Right.
You've got to find some other way of encouraging, giving people a reason to travel.
Well, that leads me into the follow-on question, which I'm sure the audience would like to hear. If price isn't the primary motivator, what is the primary or are the primary motivators?
It depends. Again, it depends on the kind of area of treatment and what the kind of individual needs of the patient are. You know, if you take the kind of high-end area of the market, that is very simply about getting the best outcome for the patient, whoever's paying for that, whether it's self-paid or it's government or it's insurance-paid. There is an element of, status, and that's certainly true in the upper classes, so to speak, in some countries where, you know, if you need surgery of a certain type, it is kind of expected that you would not get it in your own country. You would travel to France or Germany or the UK or the USA. And to access the healthcare facilities in your own country would be seen as something that those who couldn't afford it would do.
Uh-huh. Well, interestingly, we had a case last year of a nationally renowned basketball player here in the United States who needed knee repair, and he went to Germany for it. Is that the kind of thing you're referring to?
Yeah, absolutely. And you get that. And sport's an interesting area, and the same in the UK. You know, every now and again, there's a Premiership football star who needs a particular type of surgery, and they will go anywhere in Europe, wherever their advisors believe is the best treatment for that type of issue, because that's a significant. You're trying to get a very quick return on that investment. You want that player back on the pitch as soon as possible in as best condition. So, the drivers for that kind of medical travel are very, very different.
Right.
So when it comes to others, in the other self-paid stuff in Europe, if you take outbound, people from the UK is seen as a significant source of medical travelers. Well, there's a reasonable number of Brits who go abroad for treatment. What do they go for? They don't go for kind of elective surgery. They go for things like dental treatment, cosmetic surgery, and IVF. And the reasons for that, they vary from different types of surgery. So the dental travelers really is about price, but it is not about someone jumping on a plane to have their teeth whitened or to have a few fillings or something like that. They're people who are jumping on a plane to Budapest because they need a whole new set of teeth, top and bottom. And that would be costing them significant amounts of money in the UK, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 worth of dental work to fix long-term problems with their teeth, that they can make significant savings by going to other European countries. Cosmetic surgery, again, it's its own niche and its own certain. The types of people who go for cosmetic surgery abroad are in a certain social bracket within the UK. There's been some very interesting research into that. And these are often kind of set up as kind of party trips for a bunch of girlfriends who get together and say, we're all going off to Poland or the Czech Republic. We're going to have a great time out there and we're going to get some stuff done. Cosmetic surgery in that area is a very different area of treatment. And then you take something else like IVF, where people travel, again, for very different reasons. Again, out from the UK, the reasons for traveling are not because necessarily it's not about price saving. It's about availability and the ability to access particular approaches to IVF, which are either unacceptable or not legal in the UK.
Right.
Or to solve problems in the UK that have been caused by legislation. An example of that is where they've introduced laws that sperm and egg donors in the UK previously used to be anonymous, and they've changed the rules, and that means that someone can donate sperm and then get an 18-year-old knocking on their door 18 years later saying, "Hi, Dad."
That would be a surprise.
That would be a surprise. But, of course, what's happened is people who donate sperm and donate eggs, that's reduced the supply. So there is a shortage of sperm. There's a shortage of eggs. The rules abroad are much more kind of open in terms of, you know, generating what's needed for IVF, and it enables, it encourages people to go.
Well, this is a fascinating dynamic, and it seems like it's not static. It seems like it's there are many factors that are evolving over time. I wondered if you could share some of your insights, Keith, in the last 5 minutes that we have here, with how these dental, cosmetic, or these in vitro fertilization clients, how do they find or locate or source or vet destination providers?
Great question. And the answer is we know that much of the time they find that information on the internet. A lot of it nowadays is through what you would describe as social media. If you take IVF, it's social media in the kind of old sense of patient forums, patient discussion groups, not necessarily Facebook and Twitter and so on. But, you know, social media kind of has been around healthcare for a long, long time. So for every disease and every condition, you know, there are sites dedicated to patients with those types of problems. And if you take IVF, there are plenty of infertility and fertility websites where people are talking about hospitals, clinics, doctors, treatments abroad. So it's not just through our own sites, such as treatmentabroad.com, where we're enabling an IVF or fertilitytreatmentabroad.com, which we operate, which gives a patient all the information they might need, or most of the information they might need to make a judgment about how well does this clinic comply with European standards, what services they offer, and so on and so on, what it doesn't give them. And clinics are very reluctant, I'm afraid to say, to release this, is feedback from patients, from other people saying, "Hey, this clinic really was great, the care was great, the experience was brilliant, it worked," and so on. And at the moment, where they're going for that is in the kind of traditional patient forums and patient groups that exist on the internet. And Facebook, Twitter, and so on have yet to replace that, I think.
So there's no Yelp for rating of fertility clinics?
There isn't. I mean, we operate our own kind of medical tourism reviews site, and there are some real difficulties. And whether it's the sites that we run that are encouraging patients, either UK patients visiting UK private hospitals or international patients visiting hospitals abroad, we've always struggled to get the numbers of reviews that you need to generate worthwhile feedback.
Interesting.
And that's true within I don't know of any really good example where that's worked. It certainly hasn't worked in the UK. We've got a number of ventures, one called I Want Great Care, which is encouraging people to rate, you know, their patient experience of a doctor or a clinic or a hospital, and they have the similar problem. Part of the issue there is that the hospitals and clinics themselves, and this is inherent to kind of healthcare, are very wary of encouraging reviews. Mm. You know, the average doctor or clinic doesn't believe they can ever put a foot wrong. And when we do get any degree or significant degree of negativity from a patient in a review, the first thing that happens is the clinic wants the review removed.
Right.
Because their argument is this could not possibly have happened. And that's a kind of philosophy that needs to change in healthcare generally.
Well,
and will change over time.
Yes, it would be fascinating to get your views on the transparency or availability of frank, unfiltered information about providers on not only within the UK, but on a global basis.
Meaning, do I think it's a good idea, or how do we make it happen?
Both.
I think it's a great idea. It's very difficult. The only area it's kind of happened in the UK is within the public sector, where kind of hospitals don't have a choice. So because you've got a national health system, and because the National Health Service, as opposed to the hospital, can encourage and drive patient feedback, it's easier to make that happen through that. But even there, the numbers aren't stunning in terms of the people, getting people to be bothered enough to actually kind of talk about their experiences.
Interesting. Well, what I'd like to do is I would like to offer the suggestion that we schedule another interview to talk about these issues of transparency and information access and a host of others. This has been absolutely fascinating. I truly appreciate your time. I know our audience will enjoy listening to this. And what I'd like to end with is ask you to tell our audience how they can reach you.
They can come to one of our sites. That's imtj.com, which is our business-to-business site, or treatmentabroad.com. Have a look around there, or just drop me an email. You can come straight to my personal address, which is mail, M-A-I-L, at keithpollard.com.
Terrific. Well, our guest today has been Keith Pollard, who is the president of Intuition Communications, which publishes the IMTJ and is an international thought leader in the realm of medical tourism, international patient care, and private health care in the UK and Europe. This is the Medical Travel Show. I want to thank you all for joining us and have a great day.
Broadcasting from Woburn, Mass. This is the UR Business Network.